And welcome to our 4th of July show, sponsored by Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking, and this is our 4th of July special event and the debut show of What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gray. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, and it's awesome. I mean, I'm kind of shaking just being in the room with all these people, General Salinas, General Jennings, Don Goldwater, and the great Dave Isaac.
Oh, there we go. I get to be mentioned in the greatness of who we have on, or I should say in the studio today. This is exciting. We have such a great show, the 4th of July special, and none better than having people and that really have served their country so well. People take freedom sometimes for granted. Wouldn't you agree, Chris?
That's, you know what, Dave, and that's really why I put the show together, because having served, I mean, I was in some places where kids had never even seen such things as perhaps an apple, you know, or to sit down to dinner on some sort of any type of routine basis with their family for, you know, a barbecue. They have absolutely no clue, you know. I mean, it's so, yeah.
It's amazing, and we're really honored to have these three great individuals here in studio. And do you want to introduce them right now? Yeah. Sounds like the dating game, doesn't it?
That would be
Bachelor number one. No, okay.
I am definitely honored. We'll start with Brigadier General Salinas of our Arizona Guard here, and retired General Jennings. This gentleman was actually at the Berlin Wall when it went up. And Mr. Don Goldwater.
I was a washout. They wouldn't take me. I was 4F.
Well, we appreciate your service anyway to Arizona, Don, and your family service, definitely.
Oh, no question about it. So we're really honored and welcome all of you to Breakthrough Thinking and the debut show of What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gray. How do you feel about that, Chris? You're a celebrity now.
I don't know about a celebrity, you know, but... I just wanted to do something that I felt was more of a service to the community. And basically my show is all about Phoenix, whether it's, you know, charities or businesses or growing businesses, things of that nature. And as time goes on and with each show, everybody will see what it's about, and I think people will enjoy it.
Well, why don't we get some background information? Let's start with Brigadier General Jose Salinas. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you became a general, and information like that.
Okay. I grew up in a military family. My dad is a retired senior enlisted NCO. Grew up in the Panama Canal Zone, which back in those days was a huge, we had a lot of military installations there. Graduated from high school there, went to the Air Force Academy, was active duty in the Air Force for 11 years. I'm an F-16 pilot. And then in 1992, I came and joined the Arizona National Guard, was down there for about 17 years in the fighter wing in Tucson, and then came up to the state headquarters here in Phoenix and was promoted a year ago to the rank of Brigadier General. And I'm the guy that handles all the joint matters. Anything that has Army and Air that are glued together is generally one of the programs that I end up doing.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, I always wanted to ask a general, and I've never met a general. However, I'm honored now today to meet two of them. How hard is it to become a general? What is it? You know, a lot of listeners may not have any clue. When you hear the word or the title general, you think of big, large, you know, prestigious.
And you know what, Dave? Being a soldier myself, having been in a couple of different branches, actually, when a general or an admiral walks in the room, it almost brings tears to your eyes.
Wow.
Because what they've done. I mean, you just don't get there because people go, oh, here's another stripe or here's another bar. It's astronomical. I mean, so, yeah, people shudder when they walk in the room, and they should. They deserve everything. You can't honor them enough as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
I think the basic way you do it is you do it on the backs of incredibly talented people. You end up in different commands and different staff jobs, but the way I believe you get promoted is you do your job well, but you're doing it on the backs of incredibly talented people who really help you get where you end up.
And I would imagine amazing devotion and dedication, too.
Sure, but I think you see that in all our ranks, all the way down to our privates and our airmen. Everybody's got the same feeling, get the job done. But it's really done on the backs of incredibly talented people.
That's awesome. So let's go to retired General Curtis Jennings. Tell us a little bit about your background and where you started, how you started, and what you're doing now.
Well, my background's a little different than General Salinas. I actually started out, I was finishing law school at George Washington University in the District of Columbia. That's my first career. Military is a second career, if you want to call it that. And with Don Goldwater here, I was back in Washington working for Carl Hayden. I was one of his legislative aides in the Capitol there. And decided to apply for a commission in the as a judge advocate in the Army. And I told General Salinas, I think it's an interesting little story that happens. The Army, the military, always does things a little different. I was accepted, and they told the Arizona Bar, said, yeah, he's passed the bar. You can go ahead and take him, don't worry. And so I did my entrance physical in the Pentagon, of all places, and expected to get orders sending me to some post camp or station, you know, where they would teach me how to salute and put on the uniform and so forth. And I get this big thick stack of orders. Only somebody who's been in the military knows when you get orders there's a paperwork that thick. And I read through them and I thought, no, this is not me. They sent me to Fort Benning, Georgia. And I spent the next 14 weeks becoming an infantry officer, running up and down the hills, yeah. Which frankly was terrific experience because I learned how the Army really operates. And I spent the next 4.5 years as a Army officer. I did convert over to regular Army. Some of our listeners may know the difference between that and reserve on active duty. And during that time, attending the basic schools, and then I spent a year in the Pentagon in the procurement division buying things for Army and Air and advising them legally. And then I got assigned to the 8th Infantry Division in Germany and was there in 61 when the Berlin Wall went up. I need to tell you, unlike I'm sure General Salinas and others, I have not been under fire. I was a Cold War warrior all the way through, but it was a very exciting time. It got hot and heavy over there when the Berlin Wall went up. And anyway, I rotated back from there to Fort Lewis, Washington, 4th Infantry Division, and that about just in time for the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh.
And they were going to send me with a brigade from the 4th back to Europe to reinforce, a show of force to the Russians, you know, hey, we're ready to go if you're going to give us a hard time. And then they decided that really a judge advocate would be kind of would be surplus. They didn't really need more. They need fighters over there. And after that, things calmed down, so I decided that I would get out of the active Army and see how the big boys practiced law. And so I resigned my commission and took a reserve commission and came back to Arizona and went to work for a law firm. And again, the same situation as in the military. You work your way up and ended up with the law firm being the first name in it.
I notice that. It's like working your way up is an understatement.
Well,
you got the top billing.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of changes that go on, you know, people leaving, going other places, you know, and just like in the military, people retire and go on. It's been an excellent experience in the law. I have been... just last year was nominated to the Lawyers Hall of Fame in Maricopa County, and I made the Super Lawyers list and a lot of other nice honors that, and so on. But practiced, I'm kind of winding down and sort of going on halftime, taking cases that I really want to take now instead of those that normally come in. But in any event, the military, I missed it. I liked it. And so I went out and talked to the adjutant general and convinced him that he needed an active Army judge advocate. They didn't have near the support that they have now. And he thought so, too. I became his judge advocate for a few years and then convinced his successor that I could march and chew gum at the same time, which a lot of them didn't believe lawyers could do that. And so I got a battalion command and then worked my way up to a brigade. And finally, so I was telling General Salinas, I sort of had his job. They have reorganized the Guard, and we didn't have it organized when I was on the same way it is now. But I was commander of the Army Guard for 9 years, which I might say is too long to be in one position. But anyway, and finally retired in 1985.
And then you continued with law.
I've been practicing law all that time, and they did a lot of construction law, and a lot of it was suretyship, where government contracts on air bases and posts and so forth, the contractor would get in trouble, and then they'd call what we jokingly called ourselves the wrecking crew. We would go in and look at the job and arrange to have it completed as it was supposed to be. That's kind of it. I, of course, along with the command, went the rank of Brigadier General, Army, and we always had, at our level, had excellent working relationships with the Air Guard. And I imagine later on we'll be talk some about what kind of missions, which again has changed considerably with Afghanistan and Iraq, but in my day, mostly the missions that we were on were state emergency missions, floods, fires, and things like that. But
yeah, we still do that.
Oh, I know you do. And we worked up, probably you're still using some of the plans that we put together in the organizations for them. Anyway, that's enough about me.
Well, I like it. That's quite an accomplishment. Both of you are very accomplished, and the world needs more people like you. And when we come back from our break, we want to hear from Don Goldwater, of course. And, of course, Don, you've done a great service also to the country, you and your family, and we really appreciate you.
Appreciate that. These gentlemen here keep me in line, trust me.
There's no doubt about it. And we will be right back with this special edition A Breakthrough Thinking. It's the debut show of What's Up Phoenix with Chris Gray, and we'll be right back.
Able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use in real time with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to a special edition of Breakthrough Thinking. This is a debut show of What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gray, and we have an exciting show. We've already heard from General Salinas, retired General Curtis Jennings, and of course we have Don Goldwater in the studio and the star of the show, Chris Gray. How do you like it so far?
This is awesome. It's to me, like I said, you know, when you're around these kind of people, you really, it's awesome. I would rather be around these kind of people, other than my family, that is.
Yeah, your family's online too right now with their divorce attorney from Curtis Jennings Law Firm. Right.
But I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Really, thank you for your service and thank you for coming to the show.
And Don, let's take a minute.
Well, number one, happy birthday, America. Happy 4th of July. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate this great day than to be with the people that we're here, General Salinas and General Jennings, Curtis, you know, long time, and Chris Gray. You know, thank you guys for your service. Because of you, I have the right to be on this radio show and either become brilliant or make a complete fool out of myself. I just really, really appreciate it. I mentioned earlier that I was 4F. I wasn't 4F. I went in to try and join the Air Force, and this was the wind down of the Vietnam War, and I was playing football up at NAU and blew a knee after the first physical, came in on the crutches, and the guy looked at me and goes, "What, are you crazy? We're not going to pay for your knee." So it just didn't happen, but I wish I'd gone in. I wish I'd been able to go in, and instead of going in, I've tried to do as much service for the state of Arizona and tried to support our troops. I'm really excited because I grew up in the Vietnam era, and the difference between public support of our troops. I mean, I remember the movie We Were Soldiers, and at the end of the movie, they start talking about the guys coming home, and there's people coming into the airport. One guy's in a wheelchair, and one of the soldiers pushing his buddy, and they talked about why they fought. And they said, "We didn't fight for God or country. We fought for each other." And as they're walking down the concourse, there's a mother and a little child coming up. And as the soldiers get ready to pass the mother, she pulls the kid away. Because that was the feeling during those times. There was a big fight going on. You know, we shouldn't be in Vietnam. The country was really divided. And the people, in my opinion, who really took it in the face, I can't say the other word, were the soldiers that were ordered to go over there to defend our freedom. They don't have a choice. When they're ordered to do something, they have taken an oath to protect and serve the Constitution of the United States and defend the Constitution against all foreign enemies and domestic. So when they came back, you know, people were spitting at them. They were calling them baby killers. It was a horrible time for the military. And now today, you know, you may be sitting in a restaurant and some troops come in. People get up, walk across, at least I do, and I see a lot of other people do, walk across the restaurant, you know, thank them, support them. We have packages from homes. We have a lot of other organizations that people really, really support, and it feels good. It feels good to have our soldiers, you know, put in the place where they really deserve to be put, and that's in awe and respect. And I just wanted to thank you too, because of your service, I am free, and that's the greatest gift in the world to me.
Yeah, well said, Don Goldwater. Yeah. Very well said. And people, it would be nice, and that's what the show is about, showing appreciation that, and not to take things for granted. And joining us now, however, is Congressman Trent Franks, the 2nd District of Arizona. Hi, Trent, how are you?
Dave, I'm fine. How are you, sir?
Oh, I am great, and you're among great company. Of course, we have...
Well, I heard Don Goldwater's voice there. He's a precious friend. He's a great friend, a great American. Tell me who else is on.
We got General Salinas and retired General Curtis Jennings, as well as Chris Gray, who was the Navy, Marines. Both.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, I know that sometimes it's easy for all of us to say, but I just want to reflect to Don's statements that... those, especially those who go all the way most of their lives, you can't serve in this country and be a general and not pretty much give your whole life to that cause. And I just don't think there's any more noble people in our society than those that lay down their lives or put their lives at risk for the sake of the rest of us. And I want to say, you know, Don said he was glad that they had the courage to help him be free. And I've got 2.5-year-old babies that I pray get to walk in the light of freedom just like we have. But if that happens, it will be because of brave people like those of your guests that that paved the way for it to occur.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you're quite an advocate for children. I'm really impressed about that. All your life you've done this. And tell us a little bit more about that. And also, what does it mean? What does July 4th mean to you? But first, talk about your advocacy for children.
Well, you know, I started out in political activism as sort of an advocate for children from the conservative persuasion. A lot of times the left talks a lot about doing it for the children, but so oftentimes, and I want to say this in the spirit of patriotism and not in contention, but so oftentimes the policies of the left end up hurting the children in the long run. It's destructive of the family, and it's destructive of helping children learn the great spiritual and philosophical and patriotic truths that pervade American idealism. And so sometimes I'm frustrated that, you know, when people say, well, it's for the children. We've got the best thing that we can do for children is to give families the strongest chance that we can to survive, because the family remains the best department of education, the best department of defense, the best department of welfare, the best department of health and human services that a child can ever have. In other words, parents are going to try to do everything they can to take care of their child. No one loves those children like mom and dad. And if we have a tax code and the laws on the books that always favor and strengthen families, then we're doing the best that we can for the future. And I would just say to you that it's so much easier to build children right than it is to try to rebuild broken men. And that's kind of why I've always been committed to children's issues. I used to be the director of the equivalent of our children's department here in Arizona. It's called the Governor's Office for Children, and it oversees all the children's programs within state government. And I was the chairman of the Subcommittee on Child Protection and Family Preservation in the legislature. And then I went on to become the director of the Arizona Family Research Institute. And so oftentimes, you know, we get in these philosophical battles and we forget that government, even if it's well-meaning, doesn't even know the names of most of these children, where their mothers and fathers would die for them in a moment. And if we strengthen moms and dads and help them understand what a gift children are, we're doing the best for the future generation.
That is excellent. I mean, well said, and you're great role model and a great leader for taking, you know, those stance and really paving the way for future generations. I think that is just remarkable. Now, I believe you're also on the Armed Services Committee. Is that correct?
I am, and yeah, I'm on the Strategic Forces Committee, which is our nuclear profile. I think sometimes people think that, you know, a child advocate and someone that is a hawk on defense, that they're somehow contradictory, but they're really not. Whether you're a Sunday school teacher for children, or trying to make sure that you have a nuclear deterrent that would turn away any enemy that might want to try to diminish our freedoms, I think they're really the same cause. As contradictory as it sounds, you know, the last thing I want to do is to hurt anybody, but I don't want to let those who have no conscience hurt the innocent in this world and nation either. And to do that, those who do have a conscience toward the innocent must remain as strong as they possibly can so that they can deter the malevolent from crushing the innocent if it becomes necessary.
Good morning, Congressman Franks, Don Goldwater. Thank you again for your service. I got to tell Arizona and the people around here, this is one of the most honorable men I've ever met. Forget politics, but this is one of the most honorable men I've ever met in a real long time, well, my life. And the reason I say that is that, you know, when he's right, and when he's wrong, he's the first one to come out and say, you know, I'm wrong. And we really miss that, not only in society, but we miss it in politics, Trent. And
well,
I wish you were the next senator coming out of Arizona, but I understand that you're doing a great job there in Congress and that you think you can do a better job there than you can running for a higher office. And I really appreciate that.
Well, at least for the time being. But I would say this to you, not to, if I'm the most honorable guy you ever met, you just don't get out very much, Don.
That's true.
I'm blessed to get to do what I get to do. I came off of the floor of a drilling rig and stumbled onto the floor of the House of Representatives, and I'm not being humble. I'm just being honest. I don't know how it happens sometimes. I'm astonished beyond words.
You know, I'm trying to stay away from politics as much as I can, because this is the 4th of July celebration, but I want you to talk a little bit. We've got the debt ceiling fight in Congress right now, and from what I've heard in the past and stuff like that, one of the chips they use when they want to increase the debt ceiling, for some reason the military is, quote, one of the last paid, and so they use that as a chip to say, well, if you don't increase the debt ceiling, we may not be able to pay the military. And I'm tired of fire and police and teachers and military personnel being used to hold the American people up. How's that fight coming?
Well, you know, Don, I appreciate you bringing that up. And again, I'm going to sound partisan here, but I don't mean to, but it's such an important issue that you bring up. I have advocated ever since I've been in Congress that we deal with the military budgets, those who pay our soldiers first. Get that off the table. Don't let the left use that as leverage, because they do that constantly, and it is a disgrace. I mean, it's almost kind of like using those who are defending our country as human shields. You know, they know that people like me will do almost anything to make sure that we take care of our soldiers and our Marines and our airmen and the Navy, all those who put themselves at profound risk. And so what they do is they say, well, if you don't vote for this, then our soldiers aren't going to get paid. Well, that should never be the equation. Our soldiers and our servicemen, I don't mean to call them all soldiers, because I know that there's a lot of different nomenclature there, but those who wear the uniform and risk their lives for us, that should be our first priority in the federal government. That is, defending the nation is the first priority of the federal government, and I think the best way we do that is to make sure that we equip and train and protect those men and women that put themselves at risk first and foremost. And it just really frustrates me terribly when that doesn't happen. As far as the debt limit goes, it is one of the great challenges, but I also believe great opportunities. And I'm going to be very direct right now. I think our country is in critical shape as far as the financial outlook. This president, if we don't change presidents, I'm afraid that we can sign our children to walk in economic decline, the shadow of nuclear terrorism, and constitutional disintegration. Now, those are pretty strong words, but I absolutely believe them to be the case. It doesn't mean I have any personal hatred or animosity for the president. I wish him nothing but God's very best. But his policies, whether they're deliberate or naive, are the seeds of destruction for this country, and we need to make sure that he does not get reelected as president. So with that said, this debt ceiling vote is going to be a test, and you know, my thoughts are that it's an opportunity for us to get a balanced budget amendment in this Congress if we have the courage to stand by it. Whether it can happen or not, I don't know. Because, you know, oftentimes I'm stuck with voting no simply because I don't want to let us go on business as usual. But I would really love to create some kind of a mechanism when we said, all right, here's what we'll do. We'll put in a balanced budget amendment that truly will give this country the chance to survive economically. And if we have to raise the debt limit for 2 years to do that, then people like me, the conservatives, are willing to do that. But we're not willing to continue on and just say, well, we'll put it off, or we'll wait a little longer, or we'll have some little cap or spending cap that doesn't mean anything, that we'll run over it the next chance we get. We need something real, again, for the sake of those children we keep talking about.
Trent, one thing, this is Curtis Jennings, holding hostage our military, firemen, and police is a really kind of a dirty politics, if you want my opinion on it. Those guys, particularly the military, have all taken oaths to serve. And unlike civilians or even many other government jobs, you don't pay them, they quit and go home. But the military can't do that.
That's right.
And in fact, you'll have occasions in history where some of the posts out here in the West did get paid for over a year, but they stuck to their post and stayed and did it. And that seems to me something that ought to be raised, and you can maybe use that as one of the arguments.
You know, just briefly, and this is Chris Gracer. I have family in all of that. I have family in the military. I have firefighters. I have policemen. I have mailmen. And you know, so if every time I turn around, they're talking about how they're getting a pay cut or they take a vacation day or this, and I'm like, okay, I get it. Maybe if you're making cars, you know, make fewer or have, but I just don't get it. And I think if you go to up to a door and knock on it and you go to a family where they don't have any of that, they don't get it at all. They don't have a clue. They don't have a soldier in their family or somebody who's died or is dying. So I don't know. So coming from there, I guess as a lay person in politics, I just don't get it.
Well, you know, you shouldn't get it, because it's always amazing to me, just by the way, that people who serve in the military or on the police force or in the fire department, nearly always they do have sort of a family trend to do that. They come from sort of a culture of protectors. And again, I believe that they're the most noble people in our society, those that would place themselves at mortal risk to be able to stand between the malevolent and the innocent. It just doesn't get more noble than that. I mean, the good book says, greater love hath no man than this, the man laid down his life for his friend. That's as good as it gets. So, yes, it is frustrating beyond words that we would use them as hostages, as it were, in these budget negotiations, because this same administration will turn around and fight tooth and nail to protect the public employees union. I'm talking about those who work in the bureaucracies that are predominantly of a left persuasion. They'll do that for the sake of political expediency. But then they'll turn around and use our soldiers as shields for getting stuff through that is outrageous. And I tell you, it's hard to express. The anger is not too tame a word for me at all, or it's not too strong a word. It's hard for me to express the frustration without really losing my cool on this, because this is one of the more disgraceful things that is done in the political environment.
You know, and I want to switch a little bit, and I hear what you're saying, of course, and of course we, you know, Don, you used the word honorable, the most honorable man when describing Trent Franks, and of course when I think of honor also, I think of military, the honor that they so much deserve and the respect that maybe they don't get, which is unfortunate. And I wanted to ask the generals a question about this, is that I know appreciation doesn't motivate you as military people. That's my guess, because you have a job, and I think other people are motivated by appreciation. But what does that do to you at some level when you don't feel appreciated, where people take you for granted? And that's what bugs me. It's like, wait a minute. You know, I wasn't in the military like you, Don. However, you got to really try to take a second position and say, what would it be like? I mean, these people are... they're on, I mean, life and death sometimes daily. And so, General Salinas, what is appreciation? Would that have an impact on you if more people appreciated the general public, more people appreciated you?
You know, I got to tell you, from my perspective, I think we do get the public's appreciation. You see it in the airports if you're traveling in uniform. I've been out to lunch, go up to pay, and somebody paid for me. So we see that all the time, and I can tell you that we do appreciate that. That makes us feel good to know that our citizenry is behind us, because we've been pretty busy. I mean, just here in Arizona, since 9/11, We only have 8,000 soldiers and airmen, but 10,000 of us have deployed into the desert, either Iraq or Afghanistan, for combat duty. So, you know, our tempo is high, and when you have somebody waiting for you, and we have great welcome homes where the community comes out, when we see that, I believe it makes us feel like what we're doing is worth it, and that we are appreciated, and that we do have the support of our citizens. That makes a big difference in my book.
So maybe times have changed a little bit, because, Don, you were talking about the Vietnam era.
They've changed a lot, and it's great, because you know, I wanted to mention a little bit, you talk about the soldiers being over there, and it's not just the soldiers being over there and the people that support, the families that support, and the friends that support, and the community that supports, but we've taken it to the next level. That when the soldier comes back, we're now trying to de-stress, decommission, bring the soldier back into everyday field. Post-traumatic stress syndrome is now fully recognized, and it wasn't during the Vietnam years. I had a friend of mine who stood guard at La Trang, I think it was, on an ammo dump when the Tet Offensive let go, and he was in the middle of it. And, you know, when the guys came back, they didn't get any kind of support back here as far as mental support, trying to work them back into a non-military, back to your work job status and stuff like that. And I remember one time I got a call from this gentleman's wife, and she said, "You've got to get over here. Mike's gone off the wall." And I said, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "I don't know. He looks like he's in a dazed confusion. He almost looks like he's asleep, and he's tearing everything to pieces." And when I got over there, it had ended. But here's this guy. It's dead of winter. The house is down to about 70 degrees, and I'm cold in the house. And this guy is soaked in sweat. And he had woken up in the middle of the night and was reliving whatever he was reliving. And his reality was that he was in the middle of a firefight, and he was not back here in Phoenix, Arizona type situation. We didn't support our troops back in those days when they came back. I mean, I remember the public outcry of, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome. Oh, you know, that's just a bunch of guys out there, or girls, women, who are trying to milk the system. And today, that kind of support is mandatory. It's available. It's not available enough. And one of the questions I wanted to ask both the generals, because Curtis, you're a walking history book, and I'm not suggesting that you're old. Maybe I am. I'll get killed anyway. But you have been through the system since, you know, Senator Fan was around, and even Carl Hayden and stuff like that, and seen the growth of the support and what we've done for the military. And General Salinas, you're involved in it. You're dealing with it on a day-to-day basis. How can we better support our troops when they come home? How can we better support our troops out in the field? What can we do to help you guys? Because we need to.
Well, there are a couple issues that we're really dealing with, that we're struggling with. One is the PTSD that you talked about. But I think General Shinseki, the new head of the VA, is doing great work there, trying to get us the hospitals and the medical support in that area. And we're also dealing with a lot of soldier and airmen, sailors and Marines suicides, and we're doing everything we can to try to understand that terrible problem. On the guard side, we have instituted resiliency programs where we bring these young soldiers and airmen back. We put them in front of medical clinicians. We put them in front of job fairs. We try to get their life back on track. But you know, after a year and a half in some cases, in a pretty hot combat zone, it's pretty hard to come down and wind down in a month or even two or three. So we've got all these programs that are in place where we're trying to get our soldiers situated back into their normal lives. And I honestly believe that the citizens out there in a lot of different volunteer organizations are supporting that effort as best they can. So, but still, a lot of work to be done in that area.
And also, the Major League sports. I know at every Coyote game, they always honor a military person every single game, and that's got that's great appreciation right there.
Yeah, all of that means something. But, you know, getting back to the core issue, the PTSD and the suicides, a lot of work to be done there. Every one of those kids that we lose is a sad thing. And yeah. We're doing everything we can to try to stop that.
Yeah, it's not just the kid, because you lose the family, too. Hurts.
Just one quick thing, too. You know, you mentioned history and politics, and you look back in history, and you'll see where this issue has swung back and forth. The public, the nation as a whole, will get all revved up when they're beginning of a war, a shooting war and so forth. And in between wars, it's kind of the British, it's Tommy this and Tommy that, and throw him out, a bloke. But he's the savior of his country when the guns begin to smoke. And that's when there's just all kinds of examples like that have been given. I like the one Sean Connery in the movie about the Presidio of mm-hmm. San Francisco. And he's lecturing this young captain, and he says, we're like the big guard dogs. Whenever the party's going on and all the good people are in here, then they want to lock us up and keep us out of sight. But then when they need us, that's when they come and get us. And we recognize that, but I do think that the politics, again, has changed somewhat. I would say, if I had the chance to rule on it, I would say, rule politics totally out of this kind of an issue. It is a medical issue. It's a thing that ought to be done and support those troops. And we do pretty good. We've got, the 4th of July, Armistice Day, Memorial Day, and the country is doing a lot more for its soldiers than they were in the past, and I think that's a good thing.
If I may just briefly, on that, the reason I wanted to intervene in that specific spot, because you said it's more of a medical thing. In that thought, St. Joe's and Children's Hospital merged for that exact reason.
No.
They were like, you know what?
Yeah.
I have this technology. You have this technology. The kids need it. Let's just get everybody together and do the right thing for the benefit of the kids. And they merged.
Yeah. Congressman, are you still on the phone?
I'm definitely here.
I didn't want to leave you out of this discussion because you're one of the people.
I've been fascinated here. This is wonderful because you're people that have to live in the real world of the military world. I'm reminded, guys, that people like me talk about freedom. That's about all we do. People like you are the ones that carry its burden. And so you're the ones that really should speak to it more than anyone else. And yet they always look to the politician to say the patriotic thing, even though some of us feel it in our hearts.
And Congressman, let me ask you one last question, and we really appreciate you being on there, and then we'll let you go because we know you're busy. Is what does 4th of July personally mean to you? I think often with the new generation, it's about fireworks, it's about celebration, but they may not, a lot of people may not realize what's behind that truly. And what does it personally mean to you, July 4th?
Well, I guess I'm always reminded that that's the date that we remember the signing of the Declaration of Independence, when some of America's most astute, most committed leaders got together and said, there's something that we believe in this life, and that is that there's such a thing as the truth. And we hold certain of those truths in our hearts so deeply that they're worth fighting for. And the most transcendent truth, the most important truth of that is this transcending value of innocent human life, this God-given gift of life. And from that, once you recognize that every life has the imago Dei, the image of God stamped on every soul, then you realize that freedom and the pursuit of happiness and property rights and all of these other things are important as well, because they go to that central principle. And so I see the Declaration of Independence as a day when some of the brightest and most committed people to ever live in the family of man were willing to put themselves and everything they had at risk for this fundamental concept. Life is not a gift from government. It's not a gift from our fellow human beings. It's a gift from God, and therefore governments are instituted among men to protect those rights. And it is such a noble essence and such a noble principle, and it is why, in my judgment, someone asked why that these men and women lay down their lives, do they do it just out of duty? Do they do it? Why do they do it? I believe it's because they love their fellow human beings, they love their God, and they love their country. And they do it because they love what's behind them, as it were, rather than hating what's in front of them. It's not because they hate the enemy that they fight with such passion and courage. They do it because they love this principle called America, that life is a miraculous gift that beggars human imagination, and it's worth protecting, and that freedom is intrinsically connected to that essence of life, and that if we really care about the opportunity that we've been given and making sure that it is there for future generations, then we will make sure that we protect our men and women and make sure that we honor them for the bravery that is really the core reason why freedom has survived for so long.
Well, Congressman Trent Franks, thank you so much for being on Breakthrough Thinking and the debut show
thank
of
you,
What's Up Phoenix. And hopefully we'll have you on
thank
again.
You
thank you so much. And when we come back from our break, we have another special phone call. Chris, I'll let you do the introductions when we get back. But everyone have, of course, a happy 4th of July, and we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking, a special July 4th event. This is a debut show of course, Chris Gray's What's Up Phoenix. That will be heard on the first Monday of every month. And we just have amazing, really amazing human beings in the studio today. And again, reemphasize that. General Salinas right here, right in front of me, of course, retired General Curtis Jennings. Don Goldwater is in the house again. It's always an honor to have you in here. You've been on our show before, and it's always a pleasure.
I've had a lot of fun being on the show, and I really appreciate the opportunity. And we've got a new guest in studio here and some more people coming on, so I'm going to kind of hide over here in the corner, and if you don't mind, I'll let the important people talk. Happy birthday, America. Happy 4th of July.
Absolutely. And Chris Gray, who do we have? We got some more great people in studio as well as on the line two. So why don't you do the introductions?
Okay. First sitting next to me is Lieutenant Colonel's wife, Erin Lambesis, Lieutenant Colonel Lambesis' wife, family support. Group leader. And then on the phone, we have House of Representatives Doris Goodale from the 3rd District. Doris, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for calling. We really appreciate your support to our country, your service to our country, and we really also appreciate you calling in.
Absolutely. And hi, Doris. This is Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And it's a real pleasure and honor to have you here. And we asked Trent Franks. We just had Congressman Trent Franks also on the...
Hi, Congressman. I'm very proud of Congressman Franks.
Absolutely. And we're going to ask you the same question. What does 4th of July mean to you? I mean, behind everyone, you know, they think of fireworks, but what do you think of when you think of July 4th?
Well, it is an honor to always look at July 4th as an honor to celebrate the United States of America as the birth of a nation. And then it's a short trip to then think about the men and the women who have served so valiantly and bravely for our country. I do believe we tend to take our nation for granted. We tend to take those celebratory days as Memorial Day, Veterans Day, and 4th of July, and we forget why we have those most important days. And so the 4th of July is just another opportunity to say thank you to those who have preserved the freedom of the United States of America.
Yeah, that's well said, and it's so nice to, you know, have the political area with the military here today. And, of course, do you know General Salinas and retired General Curtis Jennings? If not, I'll introduce you.
Not had the honor of meeting.
So let me ask you this. How does it all play out with the military and politics? Because we've had politicians on today, including Doris Goodale right now. And so let me ask you, General Salinas, how does that play out on July 4th? I suspect, not from a policy standpoint, but July 4th is a time where everyone should be celebrating, both parties, and really look at the higher level. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, you know, when I got to be careful when I get into the political lane, but the way I look at 4th of July, we've talked about the Declaration of Independence and what those great founding fathers did, but you look at what they also did with the Constitution of the United States. The one thing that those smart people knew is that we couldn't go forward with those ideas and thoughts without a strong military. And that's where the militia, our predecessors, that's where they were born. In fact, the National Guard of today, the National Guard for Arizona, is just a distant relative of the militia. We are the militia here in the National Guard. So when I think about 4th of July, with my military frame of mind, that's how I look at it. That's how I celebrate that. You know, we've taken those great documents, we've moved them forward, but we're doing it behind a strong military and a militia, the National Guard. So that's kind of what I think about on the 4th.
You know, this is Curtis Jennings. We have Memorial Day to represent those who gave that last full measure of devotion. And that's the primary purpose of that. You've got Armistice Day now, as it's called, or Veterans Day, and that celebrates, actually from the First World War, but currently, the active duty and the veterans, those who have survived and go on, although we kind of wrap into those, the cemeteries and so on. The 4th of July, to me, is the whole thing wrapped in one, and it is the birth of the nation. And General Salinas is absolutely correct. We would not be a nation were it not for all of that, the militias of the states that were called together, and then they formed the Continental Line, the regular army, and that's the actual basis of it. And but then the documents that he mentions and so forth are wonderful documents. There's nothing else anywhere in the world of organization of a country that are like our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and so forth. And it, I think, is the birthday of the country, and so everything to do with it is put into it, and it brings in all of the ideals of Memorial Day, Veterans Day, and you could probably pick out other holidays if you wanted on it, too.
So it's like the complete celebration done.
Yeah, I am in a unique situation growing up in that the Declaration of Independence was actually signed July 2nd. And that was the day that later President Adams, John Adams, thought was going to be turned into the celebratory day. My mother was born on the 2nd of July. And the 4th of July, which turned out to be the celebratory day for our great independence, was my dad's birthday. My sister was born on Armistice Day, and then I was born on nothing, just regular day like everybody else, which kind of makes you wonder. But, you know, it you talk about post-traumatic stress syndrome. Growing up in a house like that where, you know, everybody is born on a great national holiday.
A Yankee Doodle Dandy.
No, Lord, I tell you what, I didn't know whether to say happy birthday to Dad or happy 4th of July because, you know, I had to say them both real quick to make sure he wasn't, you know, mad at me for forgetting something important. We have a very important guest in here that I really want to get into because behind every great man or woman is a spouse rolling their eyes. But there is such support that has to be from the family situation for people to go off months, years at a time to service, to protect our country and stuff like that. And it is so easy to forget the troops back home, the families back home, the support system back home, and what they have to go through when their spouse is not there to support them. I've got two children. My wife goes away for a weekend. I lose my mind. That's nothing like having somebody over in an active theater and wondering, you know, are they okay? And kids are crying. You got to get them to school, yada, yada, yada. And I'm not trying to make light of it, but I am trying to speed my comments up so we can get into this very important person. And Chris, maybe you can give an intro to her.
This is Aaron Lambesis, who is also a nurse here in Phoenix, and her husband is Lieutenant Colonel Lambesis of the Guard. And you know what? Without further ado, this is Aaron. And maybe, Aaron, you could tell us your job and your title and things of that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. As they used to call it years back, family support group. But now, with the deployments the way that they are, the thinking has transformed into family readiness group. So you get the family ready for the deployment. There are certain steps to take, such as the soldier and his or her spouse will sit down together and answer some questions as far as who would you like to be notified, God forbid, in case of a death? And some soldiers that are married actually put their mother's name down. For example, you know, how many children you have, what schools they go to, the names of their teachers. Because, again, if something tragic were to happen, we need to be able to step in, take care of the wife as far as upon notification, and then help her get through at least hour by hour, day by day, up until she feels like she can somewhat stand on her own, because it is a shock. And just because all the other troops are coming back, that's when it hits them the hardest, is that, okay, the deployment's over, but my husband didn't come back, so it really is true.
Brings reality.
It brings the reality, and it's, you know, for lack of a better word, a slap in the face.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion. This is the 4th of July special event, a great celebration. Happy 4th of July to America, all the citizens, all the great patriots. And we'll be back with our special guest in a minute.